tear down the American structure. What we are doing is very similar to what countries such as Vietnam with the National Liberation Front, countries such as China, I would like to explain the relationship that goes on between China and, say, Vietnam and America. Number one, the Vietnamese people don't have any illusion of defeating America as far as tearing America down or capturing many American prisoners, and this is not their victory. Their victory is any time that America stops oppressing them and pulls out of their country. And the dialogue that goes on between China and America, China says that, well, we have a thermonuclear blast and that we know you have it also. So either you will give some consideration to the people of Vietnam or else you'll suffer a political consequence.
WBAI New York.
But nothing happens. It's sort of a stalemate that China doesn't drop any bomb because America realizes China's strength, that she has the potential to do this, and also China realizes that America has a potential to cause a great hurt to the people of China. So there's a stalemate, but so either you have to inflict the power, or it's what I call flexing the power. You have to let the power structure know that you have this ability to cause this consequence for them. And when black people start letting the power structure know that we do have this ability to deliver a consequence if we don't get our freedom, then perhaps there will be some changes made.
But the kind of sporadic and spontaneous violence which has happened and which is expected to happen again is not the kind of self-defense and building of a power block that you are basically talking about, is it?
No, I'm talking about something in the line of what the Vietnamese people talk about. The Vietnamese people are armed strictly for self-defense, and if it were left up to them, they wouldn't fight a single day, I'm sure, because they're suffering a great hardship by having to engage in warfare. But they've worked out a strategy where that even though America has a great technology and great advancement in the military weapon, they offset this because with the strategy that they have developed, which is called guerrilla warfare. As far as this country is concerned, I've heard many of the government officials and corrupt local officials talk about, well, if black people are going to attempt, what they're saying in essence, if black people are going to attempt to gain their freedom by force, then they're just going to suffer for it. They seem to think that black people will continue to go out and try to match arm for arm, that black people are learning now through the education of the Black Panther Party and other enlightened revolutionaries. The way to victory is a long one, and it won't happen with trying to match the technological developments that this country has. As far as the spontaneous riots that the Black Panther Party stands against is, at the present time, and when I say at the present time, because, well, number one, we've observed other people getting their freedom, but in this country, we run into a situation that's different than any of these other people. As far as the Latin American Revolution and the revolution in Southeast Asia, the terrain is much different, that the people, it's basically undeveloped countries and it's not an urban country. And here we have the problem of engaging with the power structure in an urban situation, and we don't really have any blueprint to go by. because it has never happened in an urban country for some time. But as I've read that the French Revolution was, I think, could be considered somewhat of an urban revolution, where France fell and the bourgeoisie fell, and it was similar to a urban riot in this country. And I understand that the masses of the population was very unorganized, but their quest for freedom was so strong until, and they were unified in this quest, they went out and literally tore the foundation out of France and the ruling class at the time. So as far as the future of our revolution, I don't know what turns it will take, but at the present time, I would advise against the spontaneous riots. And one way that this can be done is through publications that our party has, a weekly paper, the Black Panther is called, and we teach the correct methods for liberation within the paper. And we see that there's much need for direction, and we attempt to give this direction to the revolutionary people of America.
I've been told by many people from the South that in wide areas of the South now, the people are universally armed. And yet, there has been no overt attack on the white community, but that nevertheless, there are boundaries which the white authorities no longer attempt to cross, and in the meantime, the organizations are attempting to work in some way within the structure. A spontaneous riot, for example, that might be precipitated by, you know, anything, whatever, in Detroit, in Oakland, in Harlem, might in fact at this stage give the police and the authorities the opening that they are waiting for. And at this stage perhaps the strength of the militant aspects of the black movement could be wiped out.
I doubt very seriously whether the black movement freedom can be wiped out. To do this, you would have to wipe out 30 million black people or more. So as far as the leaders, leaders come and unfortunately leaders go, leaders are assassinated, murdered, but yet the black people march on. And as far as our fear of being wiped out, we have no fear whatsoever of being wiped out by the power structure, because we realize that, as the saying goes, you can kill the dreamer but not the dream. And so we feel that our teachings will go on, and if people will identify with the party's leadership, this is what we ask for. If we can instill or project a philosophy that is acceptable to the people, then we will serve our purpose. As far as the police waiting for a chance to come into the black communities, they had the chance in Detroit, and they did just that. They slaughtered people, and Watts, even in Oakland here, Newark, and they've come in and they've slaughtered people, and by them slaughtering people, which was very unfortunate. But they raise the consciousness of many people. The people realize what danger that they are in. In many cases, there was a positive effect as far as the people who survived the slaughter by the armed forces. And what it did, it promoted the consciousness, it lifted the consciousness of the people, and also it taught them, it was sort of a dress rehearsal of, taught them, if nothing more, of what not is to be done, what not to do, and that is to go in the streets in a very organized fashion and be sitting ducks for for the military to shoot them down. And I think that everyone will agree that what happened in Detroit was much more sophisticated as far as maneuvers on the people's part than what happened in Watts. And Detroit learned from Watts. And that's one of the reasons that the Black Panther Party are activists, that we realize that black people are either illiterate or semi-literate, the masses of us, and that we don't read very much, even though certain tactics are laid down in literature, but because we're not a reading people, that we don't observe, but we do observe activity, and we're educated by our mistakes, and every time that there's rebellion, there's things learned by the black community in general. And I think that this is not only true of this country, it's true of every other country where a resistance and even a successful revolution occurred. One of the reasons that you have a small group of people like 12 men in Cuba who went to the hills, those 12 men, I'm sure they realized that they couldn't topple the corrupt government of Cuba. But they also realized that the people were illiterate. They were not readers, but at the same time, the people basically were activists and they identified with successful action. The Black Panther Party's program is a program that can be instituted immediately with what we just finished talking about was certain minor reforms. This country is not even prepared to give minor reforms. The Black Panther program can be interpreted on a level where it's simply a reform program. And for instance, we demand that the police that acts as an occupying army in our community withdraw, and the community be able to set up a judicial structure and also a police structure so that we will have people safeguarding our community who have respect and esteem for the black community. We demand that if we're going to have police in our community, that they live in our community. We constantly suffer from a from unfair trials. Whenever we're brought to trial, we're tried by not members of our peer group, as the Constitution gives us a right, but we're tried by an all-white middle-class jury with sometimes one black middle-class person in the jury who doesn't understand the community either. We demand that we have a court structure that's controlled by our community, and these are some little things that small reforms that the power structure are unwilling to give. But within our platform, as I said, that it can be interpreted on a level, we realize that the reforms won't give liberation, but in the platform and the 10 points of what we believe, that then we express the desire for a complete change in the structure, and we point out the oppressive, seemingly innate oppressive things in the structure as it exists. We make a point that we want all black prisoners released from the many jails and prisons. This seems very radical, but in fact we realize that about 99% or I think I'll be safe to say 100% of the black prisoners haven't received a fair trial, and that the Constitution of the United States already gives us a right to have this, and the power structure doesn't even follow its own Constitution. So this is why that we can expect really little from the power structure when the power structure doesn't even live up to the things that it promises and gives to the rest of the citizens in the country. So black people are slowly, well, up until this point, they were slowly. Now they're rapidly realizing the shortcomings of the structure, and they are going about to make a change, and it's happening now from the grassroots level. People seem to divide, attempt to divide the two movements into two separate categories. They talk about the peace movement, the nonviolent movement, and then they talk about the crazy radical black militants. You know, they seem to think that they're two different tactics that are being used, and I disagree with this. I think that all of the things that have been gained, and that's very little, that has been gained through the nonviolent or the peace movement has only been gained because there was a latent force behind them. And of course, at the negotiating table, and when these nonviolent demonstrators will go down, the power structure, they're not complete fools. They see that there's unrest, and that these people who are participating or behind them, they look, the power structure looks over their shoulder and they see destruction behind. They see the masses of the people prepared to go up in arms. Many people in the so-called nonviolent movement, they don't realize what the power structure is seeing when it looks over their shoulder. And maybe they don't see it because, after all, they have their backs to the masses, and the power structure, they're facing the masses by facing the nonviolent person. Only he's seeing more than the nonviolent person is seeing. He's seeing that if the things that King talked about, if they're not gained, then there's someone behind King who happens to be illiterate, uneducated, and who understands only one program, and that's the program of physical force. And these are the people that we represent.
And yet you are using every method which is open to you. I presume that that's the reason why you have are engaging, in fact, in electoral politics exemplified by the coalition with the Peace and Freedom Party.
The black militants hasn't, most of them haven't ever divorced the, they've understood that the apparently two movements, but as we see it, it always has been one, and it's one now. But what has happened, suddenly, those people that the power structure was were looking at and very afraid of have become somewhat articulate, and they now can not only deliver the force, they also can express their desires. And I think that Malcolm X pointed it out very well when he referred to Martin Luther King, and later, just before his assassination, where he was attempting to unify the complete black movement, and that he realized that King wasn't asking really for anything different than he was asking for, that the only difference was that he realized, Malcolm X realized, that the power structure would only change when some force was even either inflicted, or force was threatened to be inflicted if black people didn't get what they want. So at this point, the black militants are now voicing and articulating the grievance of the grassroots of the community, who they happen to be a part of. In the past, that the nonviolent movement was always led by the middle-class blacks, who were interested in a black middle-class problem, up until the later days of Martin Luther King. You could see a more of a merge that Martin Luther King was making with the black militant, because then he was I believe that he started to realize where the real strength was, and the real strength was in the political power that we have, and the political power is in the grassroots of the community who don't believe in negotiating, and they need representatives to negotiate for them as far as articulate a program and articulate their desires. But they are the activists, and they are the people who cause all change, and they're the makers of world history as they've always been.
Do you feel that you have any appreciable hostility on the part of the black bourgeoisie? That's one of the things which is frequently said, is that there are many frightened black people who have got jobs and so on. Do you feel that they in fact identify with your program, even if they don't do so openly, or that there is a genuine cleavage within the black community as there is within the white community between those people who approve the system and those people who disapprove the system?
As far as the black bourgeoisie is concerned, the first thing we have to realize is they only represent about 2% of all black people in the country. Most black people are in the black lower class, and that sometimes the black middle class sees their interests as a little different than the interests of most black people. Of course, some of them have very good jobs, a very high income, and they're in privileged positions. Black and exploited and discriminated against, but yet their position is somewhat privileged when you attempt to correlate it or relate it to the general mass of the black people. And I think they are afraid of their position many times because they know who's in control, and that's the white power structure. So some of the demands that we make, that some members of the black bourgeoisie will speak against, even though in the long run that will be beneficial to them, because the change will occur whether they like it or not, because they don't represent the majority of the people, of the black people. But I think that the black bourgeoisie can be related to the historical privileged position of the house Negro, even though we're enslaved, that the house Negro or the house servant received a little better treatment than the Negroes that worked in the fields, and or the black people that worked in the fields. And their interest sometimes was a little different because they were afraid that they too might be put out into the field if they didn't go along with the program of the house master, who was the white people who owned the house. Sometimes when the field black people would attempt to make changes as far as burning the master's house down, they would be snitched off by the house Negro. This didn't happen in all cases. In some cases, the house Negroes made certain potions to poison the master. And I think that this is true even today, that there's some black people in the black bourgeoisie who realize that they are enslaved as we are, and they're attempting to put poison into the system. Generally speaking, the black bourgeoisie will have to be put into line by the masses of black people. And the black bourgeoisie only exists in this privileged position because of the efforts and the suffering of black people. We have what you call universal tokenism. where black people can, if you're privileged enough to get an education, and it's providing that your family has a certain economical status to start with, that you can get out of college and even get a master's degree, and you're promised you can get any job that's open practically. You can even get high-ranking jobs in private businesses. And this is to deceive the masses of black people to say, look at this man, that he's black and that he has an education and he has this job. And you could do the same thing. So you should stop pressing so hard upon us, and you shouldn't cause revolts because it's your own fault that you don't have the education. And you could have it, and we don't really discriminate because we have a black man here. And black people have been disillusioned by this tactic, but now we see that just employing one or two black people doesn't mean that all black people, if they receive an education and if they had an income high enough, or have an income high enough and then have an education, they could have this position inside of the power structure, that they realize that the power structure is unable to employ all of its people. It's a matter of fact against the whole logic of the whole system, because the system, if it doesn't have anyone to exploit, then it becomes threatened from within, from the people who are working, because they see that they don't have control, and then they just demand higher demands to get an equal share of the wealth. In other words, that they see that where they're making $100 a week, that the owners are making $1,000 a week, but yet they're doing all the work that are producing the wealth for these private owners. The black people realize that the first thing is not to get an education, because poor black people they're too concerned about just irking out a living to eat each day, to clothe themselves, to pay money or have the leisure time to get an education. So the first thing is not an education, the first thing is full employment with a high standard, so that then we can afford to educate our children, and we'll have the leisure then to indulge in certain academic pursuits, so that we become very cultivated. So the first thing is, first things first is full employment. And many people in the black bourgeoisie, maybe they are deceived that black people who can hardly eat each day can sacrifice a member of the family to go to school. I think this is somewhat an absurd conclusion to reach, that the first thing is to straighten out the economical system.
Well, many of the programs which are suggested by people in the white community are things which might help a few individuals. I gather that you would prefer the interested members of the white community to address themselves to the basic structure, rather than to try to improve conditions slightly by various types of reform. That kind of thing, I think, is something that many people are interested in trying to do, and with good will. But it doesn't seem to me that what you say adds up to being that would be what would be really acceptable. In other words, you can go into the ghetto and you can open day nurseries, or you can get a better medical clinic, or you can do some of these things. These are things that I think many people in the white community would be happy to try to do something about. and that there are probably people in the black community who might welcome this. But this is not really what you're talking about. Or do you think that the two things can work together? Do you think that in the effort to try to improve the surface manifestations of our society, that people learn something which would lead them to agree with your point of view?